Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about some Mortal Kombat.
Absolutely. You know, both films, because we really didn't, like, you know, you didn't actually see the first one until just recently. And yeah. It'd be a nice conversation to have a discussion about both of them. And since I literally rewatched the first one, and then a few hours later went to go see the second one. I did want to actually ask you a couple of things and kind of follow up with you on a few things. We haven't had a game conversation in a while, and I know for a fact that you've gone in a certain realm of gaming that I've never had somebody that was a gamer. Christina's not really, she likes games, but she likes, like, you know, Mario, Yoshi. Like, Yoshi's her favorite character. So it's like, it's that kind of stuff. So there's not really an avenue for co-op, but you've been playing a lot of co-op games recently. You've told me you and Stephanie have beaten four of them, and I'm really curious about your experience with co-op games.
So it's different, right? So it's not my first foray into co-op gaming, because, you know, like, when I was living in Columbus, the kids, my nieces and nephews and my little brother were around all the time, and so inevitably at some point there would be some video game stuff happening.
Yeah.
But it never lasted long, because playing probably the most is with my little brother up until Stephanie and I started doing co-op stuff. Mm-hmm. And we played, like, the Lego games, and we'd play, like, a level, because playing a game with a child is a level of frustration that a lot of people just probably aren't made for. It's tough. And I say that as somebody who is a more or less casual gamer. Like, I'm not a let's do this, let's get to the mission, let's achieve this goal. I'm okay with just, like, wandering around and figuring it out. But, like, when you spent 30 minutes trying to tell a six-year-old what combination of buttons they have to press to do a certain thing, it gets a little much.
it can wear thin, to say the least. Yeah.
So we would never play more than, like, a level or maybe two in a day, because that's all my patience could take. Playing with an adult is a little bit different. And we've been on a specific kind of co-op thing. Like, there's tons of games you can play co-op, but we've sought out games, like, meant for co-op play.
Yeah.
So, because I think that changes the diet. Like, we tried to play Lego Horizon a while back, and it wasn't very fun.
Okay.
And I didn't love that game anyway. I wound up beating it on my own, but and we're gonna dip our toe back into Lego Batman here soon.
Yes.
But yeah, we played It Takes Two, which had a lot of hype around it a few years ago. Mm. And that was a lot of fun. I think the second game, or maybe not the second game, but the follow-up to that game from the same company, Split Fiction, was a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a concept more up my alley. Like, It Takes Two is about two parents who are getting a divorce, and they're basically neglected their daughter, and they get shoved into this magical realm where they have to like learn to rework together. It's a great relationship game because it highlights all of the problems that, you know, you have in a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, Split Fiction's a little different. It's a more of a friendship game, but it was more up our alley because in Split Fiction, you play, it's such a weird concept. You play writers who get brought into a collective, and that collective, this group has come up with this idea to put you in the Matrix and allow you to fully flesh out like these ideas that you have.
Huh.
And okay. What happens is you find out that the company is actually going to steal your ideas, and your two characters their matrixes basically wind up infused with each other. So one of them is more of a fantasy writer, one of them is more of a sci-fi writer. So you jump between fantasy and sci-fi realms. And there's a blending of all of it, and it's just really interesting and unique. And like I've never played a game that was remotely like Split Fiction. I wish there was a solo mode because it is a fucking blast. Just recently we beat a game called Lego Voyagers from Annapurna.
Yeah.
which I did not know that they were in the game market, and I texted you and I was like, did you know that Annapurna Pictures is making video games? Like, did they have a video game arm? It's so, like, it was so weird to me. Lego Voyagers is equal parts fun and frustrating.
I'm not one of those guys. Like, I hate frustrating games. Like,
it's puzzles. It's a lot of puzzles, but there's no, it doesn't even remotely hint you towards what you need to do.
Oh, it's one of the, it's like, did you ever play Myst? In the 90s. Oh my God, no. Like, I got so mad at that game. I finally beat it, but it took me forever, and it took me buying one of those books. Like, you know, back in the day, you couldn't just go online. You had to buy a strategy guide or a walkthrough guide, and literally, I'd say 60% of it was me reading this book, which was kind of cool because the book was set up so that it kind of suggested things. Like, it was... You had like on like still like the book was like 500 pages, right? And it was divided into the first page was designed to just kind of give you subtle hints. The second was more like a little bit more like direct. And then the last page, the third page, was like step by step instructions on how to actually solve it. So you didn't have like your level of like, you know, like it, you wanted to start off with like a subtle hint, you could go to the subtle hints. But I do not like puzzle games like that where they don't give you. There's also another game called Shadow of the Colossus. Did you ever play that game?
I never played it, but I know it's
notorious for that.
Yeah.
Like giant, it's a beautiful game. I have it. I actually have the PS4 re-resed version of it that's on my hard drive. Let's not even get into the like it's a like the PlayStation stupidity that just happened recently about that downloadable games, which forced me to log into all of the games that I had from PlayStation Plus. Now, mind you, guys, I have 35 different games that I've downloaded for free from PlayStation, and it required me like you like I don't know if you guys play like with a PlayStation, but you don't have, it stays in the cloud. You don't have to have it on your hard drive. And at any time you can re-download it and play it. Which that makes sense because I mean, even with my expanded memory, I only have 4 terabytes of information. That only gets you so many games. I had to go through until they just I was 15 of 30 games in. Like of doing it, and that took me forever. But regardless, I don't care too much for puzzle games. But speaking of Annapurna, like I was gonna go back and ask you, have you heard of Strays?
No. Yeah, that's the cat game.
Yes, I would. Yeah. I would highly recommend that game.
Is that them?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not know that. I've seen it, and I've been like. I even watched like some footage and I was like, uh-huh. That looks really interesting and kind of fun.
The best $20 you'll spend. Like it, there's a physical copy. There's like, you can get it on Amazon for $20. One of the best, like it's low stakes. Like, yeah, the cat dies, but it doesn't like, it's like this, like, I don't know if anybody knows it. It's actually one of my, like, it was one of my favorite plays of 2023. I think I played it. Basically the concept is that, the world has gone away and only robots who have no drive to do anything and cats exist. And this cat that you're playing is, your goal is to get out of the underground and into the real world. And it's just, it's a lo-fi game. It has a great soundtrack. That's like a lo-fi, like, game like soundtrack, and you just all of your things is to go up and up levels, and you kind of discover different things as the cat. It's great. You meet robots and the robots treat you nicely, and like, but then there's also like other things that get in your way that could cause you to pass and have to redo the level. But it's very low stakes, but it's also a really cool, visually stunning game. And then there's another speaking of Annapurna, since you're on that topic, I actually just bought it's on sale. If you have PlayStation Plus, it's $17.99. They just released a game that I was so curious about that I bought with only watching one trailer, not reading reviews, which is called Mixtape. Have you heard about this one?
I just read a review of it, and and basically the review was like, if you like 90s music, you have to play this video game.
Yes. That's what got me, was that it was like, it would like the game, the trailer was set to Roxy Music and Smashing Pumpkins. And I was like, okay, I'm sold. And then it was like music by, but the concept is cool. It's basically a day in the night of, these three friends on their last day together and them and their journey together. And it kind of goes in like it's skateboarding, driving around, music. I guess there's some adventure stuff. There's some like goals, and I like what Annapurna is doing with video games because they are very much so, because they're making the Strays too. Also, they're changing, they're not necessarily changing the game like the concept of games, but they're embedding it with a lot more cinematic storytelling, which is interesting. At least it seems like it.
Yeah, so the Lego game Voyagers,
yeah.
That's one of the best parts of the game, is it is very cinematic, like more than maybe any other Lego game, but it's because it's not overpopulated with stuff. Like the story of the game is like you are two little bitty Lego blocks, and you just like have to, you're trying to build something. There's a story to the game, and the uncovering the story is kind of the mystery of the game, like figuring out what the hell it is you're actually doing. So I don't want to spoil that, but you roam around this world and you're trying to build something and get to a certain place. And it's gorgeous, but it's gorgeous because, like, I don't know what the last Lego game you played was, but a lot of them have become, like, the worlds are so busy with things.
Yeah, they've, like, become very much like the Lego movie, where like, so much is going on. So much.
That it's a little distracting. And yeah. This is not that. Like, it takes a very, very simple, basic approach.
Uh-huh.
And there's literal points in the game where you'll come across, like, a spot that looks like it's going to be, like, oh, is this, like, some kind of bonus? But without fail, every time you interact with this thing and your little Lego block will stop, lock itself into place, and the camera will actually pan back and, like, it'll go... It's almost like when something goes full IMAX. Like, uh-huh. It feels like that, and the world opens up, and you're just looking at what they've designed. And, like, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's just infinitely not... Well, there's parts that aren't frustrating, but there were definitely a lot of... more than any of the other games, a lot of areas that tested the like, do we need to just put this down because it's getting a little too frustrating for both of us? Like, either neither one of us could do something, or one of us could figure something out, the other one couldn't. And it's because it wants you to kind of direct everything. It's not telling you what to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a lesson, I guess, in communication, because one of you might be doing, like, oh, I know what to do, and then try to do something, while the other one is just like, I don't know what to do. I'm just bopping around this world. It's this little Lego brick. And it doesn't do the, like, separate the screen thing that Lego games do. Like, you have to be in the same space. And so... Yeah, that's, you know, I could see some fights coming from this game. you know, if you're not really good at the communication thing.
Yeah.
After we beat that, we started playing a game called Splintered Fate, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Splintered Fate. Splinter's Fate.
Yeah.
Have you ever played a roguelike game?
No.
Okay, so I didn't know what that was. And I tried... This game you can play solo. It is better to play with a partner. Roguelike games are games where you literally play until you die. And then you start over a little bit better off. You were before.
Yes, I have played. Okay, so now I know what you're talking about. So one of my favorite and most frustrating games that I've ever played was Hades. Have you heard of Hades?
Yes.
Okay, I played the first Hades. I haven't played the second Hades. I don't know if I'll ever will play the second Hades, but Hades is very similar, where you're left with more weapons. And you find out more about the story, but it's very much like what's the Edge of Tomorrow? All you need is kill, whatever you want to call it. It's a looping game. Okay, so this one, what is the concept? So you're playing Splinter, or
no, you're playing as you get to choose one of the turtles.
Turtles,
to
start. Okay.
Eventually, you can choose Casey Jones.
Oh,
but you
okay.
have to like get to a certain point. Where you
of
can
course.
Choose Casey. So it's doesn't have a ton of levels quote to it. But that's because the point of the game is like, you're going to die and then start over. So it's Splinter's been kidnapped, of course, by Shredder, and you're fighting your way through, like, it starts in the sewer, then you go to the docks, and then, you get, I think, into the city, and I haven't gotten past Bebop and Rocksteady yet, so there's only Shredder after that. It looks a lot like Ninja Turtles, the arcade game.
So, okay.
If that's your like aesthetic, it's definitely up your alley. It has a good portion of like RPG elements where you're choosing what powers to upgrade. I am not a big fan of that because I call it like some kind of like brand of autism I have. I don't know. But when you give me like so many choices, it's like I freeze up and I'm like, I don't know what to choose here because like I'm going to upgrade one thing and then I'm going to find out that that was the wrong thing. I should have chosen something else. And like, I struggle with that. And so the co-op portion of that helps because it's her and I both like, here's your like three things that you can choose. What do you think is the best one? And the fighting mechanics are really fun. The repetitiveness is not great for me. Like, I've heard the same like seven bits of story many times.
I hate that.
And like, it doesn't really change. There's also, I know that there's like a really solid story there with the like Splinter being kidnapped, but the game doesn't do enough starting out to tell you like about this version of the turtle world. Like, you fight Karai at some point, but they don't tell you who Karai is. Like, I know who Karai is because I watch a lot of turtle shit. I've read a lot of turtle shit.
Yeah.
But like, if you're not really that into the turtles, it's like, who is this chick? Like, what is this about? Like, and they'll mention characters like the geckos show up at some point. And
oh, damn.
It's cool. But like, if you're not well versed in the turtle lore, it becomes a little like nothing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No. That's like, it's cool because it's for the fans, but at the same time, if you don't know,
you don't know. It could turn you off because you're like, I don't understand any of this. I don't know who these characters are. I just wanted to like be Donatello and hit shit with my bow staff, you know? And you can do that, but like a chunk of the game is just going to be like, for you. And if you're not into the whole roguelike thing, which had I known that that's what it was, I probably would have bought the game. Like, I bought the game because it was not super expensive and it was Ninja Turtles. And I had a lot of fun with Shredder's Revenge from a few years ago. And I was like, oh, this will be fun. I'll play another Turtles game. And like, I was trying to play it solo and I didn't understand what the game was. So when I died, I thought I would just pick up where I left off. And I was like, oh shit, did I accidentally erase my save file? I didn't understand. I had to do a lot of research because if you don't, that's the other thing. The game doesn't tell you what the experience is going to be. You just were supposed to figure it out or know what you're getting into, which is not always ideal. You know, it's a game for hardcore gamers, I guess. Well, maybe not hardcore, but definite gamers and people who are really into turtles and the lore, because otherwise you're just going to be kind of frustrated. But the gameplay is really, really good.
Gotcha. Okay. So like, it's also why I'm bringing this up is because, and did you play Voyagers on the Switch or on the Switch. PS5?
And Voyagers, I don't believe has a physical release.
No, it doesn't.
You can only get it digitally. So, I think the Nintendo shop had like a massive Lego sale. A couple of weeks ago, because I bought Lego Worlds for like $6. I got Lego Voyagers and a couple of other like Lego kind of things. that were super, super discounted. And so I think I wound up only paying like maybe $10 for Lego Voyagers. It's certainly worth the $10. It was just a little frustrating to figure out some of the puzzles. And once you do, it is, did you play Portal?
Yes. Yes, okay. I did. So,
Portal is a game I desperately wanted to play with Stephanie, mm-hmm. but she can't do first person shooters. They make her nauseous.
Okay.
So that was out. But remember how in Portal, like figuring out how to do the puzzle could be so fucking frustrating.
Yes, it could.
But when you figured it out, there was so awesome.
Yeah. There was that like that rewarding, like that was one of the few puzzle based games that where the puzzle solving was rewarding. Like it was really rewarding in how like in how that they were constructed. So yeah. No, absolutely. I am 100% with you on that
one. Quite that level, but it is very like, oh, okay. And like once you get it, it is mm-hmm. a nice feeling. It's just there were a couple of times where we spent a good like 20 minutes just like bopping around trying to figure out what the hell we were supposed to do, and it could get a little much sometimes. But yeah, and you know, it's kind of led to us playing more games in general, so not just video games. We've gotten into a lot of like, I mean, I wish I had like a giant group of friends that I could have a game night at, you know, every couple of weeks. But
yeah,
most of the people we do know have kids and don't have time for shit like that. So
yeah, I know. But you and me both.
So we've started really getting into just two-player games. Like we look for two-player games. We play a lot of Magic the Gathering. A lot of Lorcana, the Disney kind of card game. Your wife loves like Disney stuff so much. I like that. If she can get into gaming, like it's really fun. It's just Pokemon with Disney characters.
Yeah,
but like, there's some really cool card sets out there. So we play a lot of Lorcana, but then we also like just find some like off the wall games every now and then. Like we got one called, I think it's called Codenames. There's a two player version of Codenames.
Okay.
And we picked that up and like, that's really, it's weird. It's kind of like Battleship meets, is it Guess Who? The game where you like, from like childhood, where you're like describing the, it's this weird mix of like Guess Who and Battleship. That's a lot of fun. There's a Lego board game.
Oh,
that, I can't remember the name of it, but uh-huh. it's like, some kind of something temple, that we found a couple of weeks ago that we got that. And that was really, really fun. So yeah, we've become kind of like two person gamers. Going back to the Magic the Gathering thing, mm-hmm. there's a Marvel Magic the Gathering set coming out next month that
I did see that.
I'm going to fucking go. I'm like not broke, in debt buying those cards, because there's so like we did the Spider-Man set. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. We did the Turtle set that just came out recently. That was fun too. And they did a really cool thing for the Turtle set, which there's probably some other Magic sets that did it too. But mm-hmm. so you bought a set. It came with four like playable decks and then a villain deck. And what you do is you're not playing against I don't know if you've ever played Magic or anybody who hasn't played Magic, but
I played it. Yeah.
Much like Pokemon, like you're playing the other person, like you're playing against the other person. When this set, you have the villain deck and you're both playing as a turtle against the villain deck.
That's very cool. That's like D&D without the Dungeon Master.
Yeah.
Like, so, that's very cool. I like that.
Lorcana has a few sets like that that we got really in, because like it's fun to play, but when it's only two people and you're constantly just playing
each other, yeah,
like, that can get a little like, okay, well, it feels like I'm getting beat up on, you know. So yeah, it's we found some like weirdly cooperative board games where we're not just playing each other. So yeah, it's been fun. It's weird to be like, that's my favorite thing that we do together. Like, maybe going to the movies is my favorite thing to do with her, but that's a pretty close second. Like, we also do a lot of puzzles, but I mean, jigsaw puzzles are not exciting. So they're great for like, you know, calm. Like, we just need quiet, calm. We're gonna sit here, listen to some music, and put a puzzle together. So
absolutely. The reason why I did partially ask about your gaming stuff is I actually, it's my birthday coming up in a few days, but I'm actually planning on for my birthday, because nobody gives me gifts. I tell people don't get me gifts. It's just
too bad, because I got you something, only it's not gonna be here because I ordered it from Gallery 1988.
Oh, and they're
taking like fucking 8 weeks to ship that shit. So like, I guess that they're like, fuck it, we closed down, so you get it when you get it. But when it gets here, I'm gonna send it to you.
But I was actually going to, I would like, what, like, and it's so weird what convinced me to get it. I'm going to get a Switch 2. I'm going to upgrade my Switch 2. And it was two games. The first one was the Poketopia. Like, I'm a side kind of fan of Pokemon. Like, I like the first anime. I like the Pokemon Arena. I don't know if you ever played that. I like the games.
That was the 64 game?
Yeah. Yeah. The one where you actually fought as one of the Pokemons. But everything else is kind of like, the card game was, I wasn't a big card game guy other than Magic. And now it's become this whole thing for me that's super toxic. I'm like, oh God, the resales. But anywho, that game, because I'm a Animal Crossings fan, really kind of like that. And then, did you see the Star Fox presentation that Switch 2?
I didn't see the presentation. I saw the aftermath of the presentation and everybody kind of losing their shit about Star Fox.
Yeah, I already pre-ordered Star Fox, but even before I got my Switch 2. And I was going to go to, I'm going to go to Costco to get it, because Costco has like five games that are $30 a piece right now. And if you know anything about Switch games, and I'm not talking about the cheap ones, I'm not talking about some like off brands game. I'm talking like Metroid, the newest Pokemon game, not the Poketopia, but the other one. And the Mario games are all $30 a piece. That is unheard of. Most of the time, you cannot get those games for under $60. So I literally flipped my shit for the Star Fox game. Like, seeing it and what it can do and what it's supposed to do and its ability to play single player and multiplayer across, like, you know, like, it's going to be one of those games where, because you have all of the different characters, you're going to be able to play multiplayer across LAN or across WAN, whatever you want to call it, like MMO kind of style. I'm super sold for. And then the camera. Have you heard about this whole thing with the embedded camera and how? No. So it has. So like, when you're playing as one of the guys, you know, either Pepe, a Fox, Slippy, whoever you're playing as, the camera, when you're talking, the camera will pick it up and do what like AI does, which is Like if you're Fox, you're playing as Fox, and it's actually your friends can see you in your heads up display as Fox. Oh, and talking cool. as Fox, which I was like, that's just cool as shit. And just the presentation, like I would suggest anybody watch the presentation alone, because it shows the intro of Fox, like Marumoto comes out and the opening or the introduction of Fox on the movie is shown. So like anybody who wants that awesome like bit of like you know peppy like intro, like you know, like get that hit of that intro again, like just watch it for the first 10 minutes or first 5 minutes and watch the intro, because it literally like it's the first like the first couple of minutes is that intro from Mario World, from Mario Galaxy, and then it goes into the game, and the game looks impressive. Like, so much so that I'm like, yeah, I think I need to get a Switch too. I'll play the Pocatopia game, and then in June when it comes out, I'm definitely playing this damn game. And they've upped the ante. Like, if you haven't seen any of the gameplay, it's the different worlds. Like, it's galaxies, it's world on world. It's very Star Wars-esque. It goes underwater, it goes on land. All of the different terrains. It's very X-Wing coded. Like it's like a Rogue Squadron coded. Yeah. Like asteroid fields and all that stuff. It looks super impressive. Like so much so it's like you know, like I was trying to explain to somebody what like a kid recently who was like wanting to know, like, you know, like was like, what's the big deal about retro gaming? But then also like, you know, laughing at the graphics. And I'm like, well, like your graphics now are what we saw those graphics as back in the day.
Yeah.
Like I still can look at the Star Fox 64 graphics and go, I remember I flipped my shit for that. I was like, there's nothing like this in the world. Or like the first PS2 version of Final Fantasy that I was like, dude,
I remember getting my day of getting my PS2. One of the first games I got was like launch games was the Madden game.
And yes.
Thinking like, holy shit, this is like, this, it'll never be better than this.
Like, right? And in some ways it wasn't. I mean, let's be honest, those first Madden games on the PS2, like the first like 3 or 4 years of the PS, like the PlayStation era of Madden, it was like literally one of the best, right? Like,
yeah.
It was like, but even now, like the games now, like watching, like Nintendo, I don't think has ever changed their, like their core values, which is like playability and inventiveness over everything. Like graphics are secondary. Like it's funny because like everybody says like, you know, Switch is only the equivalent of a PS4, right? And I'm like, I don't care. I can hold it in my hands.
Dude. So to your point, so I'm not slacking off the solo games, mm-hmm. but you're talking about retro gaming.
Yeah.
What I've done is instead of buying new games from my Switch, I've started just going because I subscribe to
the Nintendo World or whatever it's called. Yeah.
And so I have access to all those old like Nintendo games.
Yep.
Like digitally. So I never owned a Super Nintendo.
Oh, so okay.
I never played
like Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, Mario Brothers.
I never played Super Mario World. So I recently just beat Super Mario World.
Oh.
I'm playing Super Mario World 2 right now.
Oh, nice.
Which is fun because you just get to play as Yoshi.
That's, yeah.
I would imagine that like it's a game right up your wife's alley. Like just
yeah.
Like, I'm playing as Yoshi. Carrying around baby Mario sounds good.
So. That's literally the game that made her a Yoshi fan. That and Yoshi's World.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've played Yoshi's World yet, but when you get to it, that's probably one of the more fun games to play. But yeah, oh man, that's like, I love their, like, what they've done, which is you just get the games. Like, you just get the games included, and it has save points, so it's not like...
I will say this. It is infinitely easier because you can, A, save at any point, and B, rewind up to, like, the last, like, minute of your gameplay. You just hold down two buttons, and you can, like, if you made a mistake, you can just rewind right before, so you can do something different. So it does make it less frustrating, but
yeah,
I'm also not, I mean, we're both older gamers. We know that there were plenty of times we wanted to break that damn controller in half.
Oh yeah. So dude. you will, like, what I've learned is, like, as I got older, that controllers got jankier. Like, that first Nintendo controller, you could throw that motherfucker all over the place and it never broke. Like, it was designed for frustration. But yeah, no, absolutely. Like I have to ask, like now that you're experiencing some of those games were the hardest games I've ever played in my life.
I'm gonna do everything in Super Mario World, but by the time I got to the end, I was like, nah, beating this is enough. Like, some of the little unlockable things, or like the Yoshi coins, or were so frustrating to try to get that I was just like, I'm not gonna go back and try to unlock everything. Like, this is good enough. I beat it. It's fine.
Also, like, whenever you get to, like, because I know that you probably eventually will do Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, those are epically difficult, especially Majora's Mask.
I did have a N64. I played Ocarina of Time. Like, Ocarina of Time is one of my favorite games of all time. And so, yeah, I do want to replay that. But now, Majora's Mask, I actually still have my N64 copy. I never beat it. Like, I started playing it, and then
so hard.
I got frustrated with it. And never. Same with Wind Waker was another game I just never beat. Like, I was having fun with Wind Waker, but it just wasn't as interesting to me. As I was like, I don't know, I'd rather just go play. I actually had, so it's funny, I don't have Ocarina of Time on the N64. Mm-hmm. I do have Ocarina of Time on the GameCube.
Yeah, I actually, okay, so like the only game I've ever kept was their up-res, because actually, Mike, like, the what got me to buy GameCube was that Ocarina of Time was released with a GameCube, and you could only buy it with that GameCube, right? And so, like, I bought that, but I my GameCube broke, but I still have, like, four games. I think I have Star Fox Adventures, Rogue Squadron, and one of the Mario games, and then I don't know where they're buried in some kind of box, but with all my other gaming stuff. But I do have that Ocarina of Time, because it is so expensive. That game is worth so much money, and I'm not going to trade it in, like, you know, just do whatever. But also, like, I love that game. That is probably my favorite Zelda game, and it might be my favorite, like, game of all time. Maybe.
It's pretty high up there for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's that and like Super Mario 3, of course. It's just so it's the original Zelda game is as big as it, but like, it just, I don't know. There's something about that game that just brought you into that world like never before, like no other Zelda game.
For me, it was like, and I had thought about it, cause I've played it four times, right? I've played it through four different times. And the last time was actually on my Switch. like I actually played it on my Switch through the online because they had it. They had the N64 stuff, right? Went so far as to actually, I bought the N64 controller to actually.
Nice.
But anywho, for me, it's the whole thing of like, it took all of the concepts from the original and also Link to the Past, where you go into different worlds, but yeah. It made it so much more like it was like a 3D adventure game, right? And it like it was the first time I had ever seen anything like that. And man, like it was the best. Like it was literally like the story, everything. They never did it any better, at least to me. The gaming control system, the way that it worked on the controller. And I mean, like, but then also like I feel like the N64 controller, like low key, was like the best controller of all time. It's the controller that everybody bases things off of, right?
It's pretty great. Like I do miss, like when I'm playing my Switch, I do kind of miss the old N64 controller. But the problem is I play a lot of handheld, so it wouldn't work.
Yeah. I have a tendency to do that. Though recently with my Switch, I've done a lot more on screen, like plugging it in and actually using my different controllers, just because I got used to I've gotten used to playing non-handheld with my PS5. And so like, you know, you switch over and it's kind of like, I'm not going to say it's difficult, but it's an adjustment, to go from handheld to big screen and big screen to handheld.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's ultimately like, I'm definitely buying, like I'm, like, probably Monday or Tuesday, I'm going to go and buy myself my Switch, Switch 2, and then transfer. The nice thing is that they're not like PS where they cut off the Switch over. If you transfer your games over, like your save points to the cloud, and then you put like any game that has a re-res or re-upped Switch 2 version, they'll do that for you for free. Like PS doesn't do that anymore. They cut that off. But I guess Nintendo is not gonna, like, you know, anything that has a re-up version and you have a cartridge for, or like you have the SD card for, they'll just let you do it. Like whatchamacallit. Like I know that Animal Crossing has a new update specifically for the Switch 2. So I'm actually gonna do that, and I'm gonna play some more because I love Animal Crossing. It's probably my, I love low stakes games. It helps me. Like instead of doom scrolling, it's like, you know, let's hop onto the Switch and play a low stakes game. And I'm genuinely curious about the Poketopia and like how they managed to like combine that together. So we'll see. And then I haven't played the Galaxy and Galaxy 2 combo pack.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wait for the Switch, and then I'm going to put that on there, the two.
I wish I could get into Super Mario Galaxy. I tried to play the first one. I couldn't get into it.
So. It's, you know what it is? It was difficult because it wasn't a kid's game anymore. Like it was like we evolved into an adult game where it takes some dexterity, and I didn't have it. I've funneled through them, and I'm very curious about how I'm going to adjust after, because those ones came out on the Wii. I'm going to see how I'm going to adjust to it, especially because so much of the controller, like Wind Waker, was off of the Wii and how you handled the controller. You know, that's another game that I was not fond of. Like, I haven't been, like, is it a hot take to say I've hated Zelda games since Majora's Mask? except for the ones that they redo that look like the top scroller old school ones that they just up the graphics a little bit for. Other than that, I've really hated the Zelda games. Like, no. Was it not Wind Waker? Breath of the Wild, I think, is the one.
I've tried repeatedly to play Breath of the Wild without a lot of success. I've got the Switch version. I think I've talked about this, and it just it required motion controls.
Yes,
and it is just not ideal. So,
yeah. But also, like, the way that they do the gaming system, and I don't know if I've talked about this before. I probably have, which is that, like, when you have a sword, it goes away after the newest ones. They go away and it doesn't change. Like the newest Zelda game I saw, I was like, I instantly looked up the reviews and I was like, I want to know exactly what about the combat systems, because I don't want the weapon to go away after. Like, I understand arrows, right? Like, I play PS5 games, so I know when the arrow goes away, it goes away. But it's like imagine a sword goes away after 5 strikes. Are you kidding me? Like, no, I don't want that. So it just becomes very annoying because you end up hunting for weapons more than anything else.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like, and it's really sad too, because I love Zelda games. Like, some of my favorite games are Zelda games, but now never. I can't do it anymore. I cannot do Zelda games anymore, which sucks. But I will report back once I've had some experience in some game, playtime with it, about the actual Switch 2. And then, but I feel like it's, since we've been talking about these games, it's kind of like a great segue into Mortal Kombat!
So very recently I watched the first new rebooted whatever Mortal Kombat. And it's one you had told me to watch since it first came out. You're like, no, it's a lot of fun, you should check it out. And I just never got around to it. And this new movie's coming, so I'm like, well, I guess I need to watch the first one. Because I definitely wanted to see the second one, Johnny Cage.
Yeah.
And, I got to say, I really, you're right. That first movie is better than it has any right to be, really.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. The characters are just, they're not too deep, but they're deep enough that if you're even slightly a Mortal Kombat head, you're just like, oh yeah, like this is Cole, Kano, Jax. Like, Jax getting the arms in the first one, like, that's, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
But I this is probably not even remotely a hot take, because I'm gonna talk about him in the second movie too. Glad they found a way to bring him back. Josh Lawson,
yes,
is as Kano, is the unsung, maybe not unsung, but he is the MVP for sure.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And then the way that they managed to who he gets paired up with when he comes back. It's perfect. It's it's the secret sauce of the movie's last half, because the last half of part two, it gets a little pedestrian, because it's very kind of the chosen one has to fight, even though they choose somebody that's a little bit different than you initially think, which is nice. As long as you know the story, you're kind of like, oh, okay. Like, the first opening moment, you kind of can predict it. But yeah. Josh Lawson is Kano in both movies.
Yes.
Is the best part of the movie.
So here's the thing about Lawson. So this is a guy that you might recognize. He's unrecognizable in Mortal Kombat, because I didn't know he was Australian.
Yes. Had
zero clue. So the whole time I'm watching the first movie, I'm like, I know this guy. I know this guy. Where do I know this guy from? So
you know him from two places.
Yeah. So he is a main, he's a main part of a current comedy called St. Dennis Medical.
Yep.
Yeah. And from Justin Spitzer. And he's been working with Spitzer for a while, because he was a constant like guest star on Spencer's previous hit Superstore.
Yes.
And like, he's really fucking funny. And you would not like it. It is house level, which is appropriate because St. Dennis is a medical show, but it is like house level of like, wait, what do you mean this guy is not American? Because yeah, it is the perfect kind of thing. So, and it, he's just so funny, so perfect in this Kano role. Like, I don't know. And he's great with the cast. It's, I hate to say that, but when he's not, maybe that's part of, we can just talk about the second movie. So
yeah,
I didn't love the second movie as much as I liked the first one.
No, it definitely, like, it had more highs and lows than the first one. The first one was very, I think that for me, like, the first one was surprising because it was so good and it kept its story small. This one tried to make it a little bit bigger, but I feel like they got certain things right, but they got certain things not right and wrong. Like the Johnny Cage stuff I really liked, like the opening stuff. Yeah. I know they were trying to do twists and turns with the Liu Kang and the, like, all of the other characters. I don't know if I liked it. Like, I didn't, like, it was, like, kind of, like, the worst stuff in the movie where I was like, I don't know. This is, like, just the Katana stuff was, like, you could have written it better.
It's such a, and I know the story's not, like, I know that Guardians of the Galaxy was kind of ripping off other things with their Gamora Thanos story, but
yeah,
we saw that on such a, like, such a big property that now it just feels like that's Gamora and Thanos's story. And so that's all it felt like, was like this rehash of a plot line we saw in a Marvel movie, which sucks because she's really good.
Yeah, she is. She's very good. Like it's not to take away from her or the actress that played Jade. It's just they're hampered by something that it feels like is not as well written as the Johnny Cage Kano stuff. Like, yeah, like it really isn't like it. And it's like everything that's happening there is very kind of like what you want. And then this is kind of like pedestrian. It's very standard issue. It's very kind of like, oh, okay, well, I mean, I guess it, like, and that is not to say I didn't have a lot of fun. I think that there's just enough, like, it's almost like they wrote it to be something and then they edited the shit out of it because they didn't have what they needed. And rather than try to go back and rewrite it, which they really should have, they had a year to do this. They had over 2 years to edit it. I mean, it was finished in 2020.
Editing, I think, is the thing. Like, so for me, the movie's not tight enough, is what I felt like. Like, the fights certainly are not very tight. Like, you're allowed to kind of, and maybe that's what they're going for, but you're like, they give them a lot of room to breathe in the fights. Like, it doesn't feel like propulsive, you know?
Like the first film was very, it had very bursty action.
Yeah.
Like, it was very short and brutal and kind of like it was fun, but it was also kind of like I said, it was a very, it's not to say that this isn't brutal. It's just like, you're right. Like the Kano, not the Kano, the Liu Kang fight with his brother.
That's the best fucking fight in the movie.
but I would argue with you, it's actually Johnny Cage fighting the mouth guy.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah.
But emotionally, the fight of
the tournament, for sure.
Yes. Oh, absolutely, yeah. But that's a symptom of it, because I think it goes on, like, it's a 7-minute fight. And it wears out its welcome just a little bit because it's repetitive. It continues to use his flames and the hat all the time, and it doesn't find a new way to bring something to it. And that's what was fun about the first movie, is that the fights were very impactful, but they also were done in a way that was like, how can I put it? They were short, impactful, but also like story driven. Whereas this was almost too story driven, and it felt like they didn't know how to like, and again, like I'm going to say, like, I had a lot of fun. I really liked this movie. It's just, you can feel the extra 10 minutes. Like the difference between this movie and the other movie is literally 10 minutes, but you can feel the 10 minutes in the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Like in it, I really think you can claw back 10 to 12 minutes by more tightly editing most of those fights.
Yeah. But I will say those fights, like in the crowd that I saw it with, which was a packed house in an IMAX, like they ate up that stuff. Like it was a fan, like it wasn't like, you know, like to say fan screenings. It wasn't a fan screening officially, but you could definitely tell people were gamers there, because there were like moments where people would laugh and go, oh yeah, that's definitely somebody's a gamer here, because of the things like the bartender being Ed Boon, like literally like a cameo by one of the guys who made Mortal Kombat. And like people like, ah, ha, ha, ha. I'm like, oh, how does, like, there's like four people that probably know that. But anywho, but you're right. Like there is this whole thing of like it's almost like it's too relaxed, in certain things. And maybe it is the fights. But that being said, like, I will say, like, I guess I can kind of understand. It's just, I feel like they were almost trying to go for, like, you know how like Hong Kong, like Hong Kong films, like the Shaw Brothers movies, like their action scenes are like 10 minutes long and they talk in between certain things, and they were trying to go with that. But unless you have Wu Ping doing your, or some martial arts master doing your choreography and giving them the time, it's not going to work, right? Like it's just, it's going to come off not lazy, but sloggy. I guess is the word is for me, is that, especially because the car, like the Kano Johnny Cage stuff is so punchy, but then even the Sub-Zero and Scorpion stuff, like the stuff in Hell, like that's awesome. Like without a doubt, that's awesome. Like I love that stuff, but I also love that stuff in the first movie. Right. Like but the rest of the stuff, like her fight, like Katana's fight with Shao Kahn,
yeah,
should have been a little bit more Vader versus Skywalker-esque, right?
I agree. And it tries to do that. I don't know if Simon McCoy. I just don't know if he has the skill to pull off something like that.
I'm gonna actually put it more on Jeremy Slater also, because Jeremy Slater is the writer showrunner for a show that you really dislike, and a show that has the same fucking problems that this movie has, just not in a greater capacity, which is Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Moon Knight doesn't understand, like, here's the thing, like, conceptually, the movie doesn't understand, like, it makes certain right decisions, like, right, like, they knew on a high macro level to bring Josh Lawson back as Kano, because he was, like, the best thing about the first movie, right?
Yeah.
And then they upped it by making him not a bad guy, but a agent of chaos, Han Solo-esque character by the end, like who has churned and is a part of the team, so that when they do the underworld stuff to bring back all of the people, to bring back their team, like in the third movie, like you're with them because you're just like, oh, well, Kano's there with Johnny Cage the mouth guy, I can't think of the mouth guy's name. I did love that. Like, that was probably my favorite moment in the movie. His whole story arc.
Yeah, that whole thing is a baraka. That whole thing is just so much fun.
Yeah, like, and the guy who plays him, C.J. Bloomfield, is so good because it's very kind of Drax-coded. Like, this is very much like Guardians in a way, because you had, like, it's both Guardians, and I think that I wouldn't be surprised if they pitched it to Carl Urban as you get to play Jack Burton 2.0.
Yeah.
Because it's...
He gets some of the best, like, one-liner kind of digs. And I really appreciated that the movie wasn't afraid to call out the things it's kind of ripping off.
Yes. You know? And also kind of give him some shit for, like the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings thing was fucking hysterical. I'm like, dude, you were in Lord of the Rings. That's crazy.
Exactly. Like, I was like, oh man, that's hilarious. Absolutely. Like, it's interesting because it's not a bad movie. It's just, like I said, it's the things they didn't learn the correct lessons from the correct things.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they definitely did. they did certain things in certain ways that they really zeroed in on certain things that would work, right? Like what's his name? Like I feel like they should get an award for casting Carl Urban as Johnny Cash or Johnny Cage, because that is, like, for the storyline that they're doing. Like,
it's perfect. Like, he's such a, like, a good it's weird. He's almost underutilized. And part of that is maybe because they wanted to bring Katana and Johnny Cage in, and you have to give both of them, like, or you equal, try to give both of them, like, this equal screen time,
yes,
equal story, like, pulling. But, like, one of the things about the first movie is, like, most of those characters, you do not know their story. They're just there.
Yeah. You don't like, there's like, it's kind of frustrating because and here's the thing where I think they haven't perfected the gaming stuff, which is that it's like the Minecraft movie where a lot of the stuff is secondhand knowledge. If you have the secondhand knowledge, it's great, but they don't give casuals or non-gamers an entry point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're literally sitting there going, like, okay, well, here are these characters. And they just expect you to have the backstory of, like, 20 years of not just games, but animated series, TV series. Because what I can't remember the TV series name, but they had that TV series for a while, right? Which it all references. Like, that's kind of, like, actually the cool thing about this thing, which is that both movies kind of reference. It's not just like a remake of the first two movies or even the first game. It really does take into account all of the mythos and mythology that the games bring. And I know that people think, oh, well, like, people that haven't played the games, right? Oh, well, how can there be mythology when it's just a fighting game? And I'm like, no, like, you don't understand.
There is. It's funny, like, leaving the theater, and this is probably a little bit of Mortal Kombat blasphemy, but, like, one of the things that has always bothered me about Mortal Kombat mythology, like the whole lore of Mortal Kombat, is that Sub-Zero went from, like, this dude with, like, ice powers who's a great martial artist, and to this shadow demon. And I never fucking understood that. Never. Like, I get, like, you're trying to find a ways to bring him back and give him a new power set, but, like, then why the fuck is he called Sub-Zero Man?
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird to me, but it is in the mythos of Mortal Kombat. Like, that's in the lore. So I don't have a problem with them including it. It's just one of the things about the lore that I've always just been like, yeah, that didn't make any damn sense. Like, nobody else comes back as a shadow demon thing.
No.
Why does he? Like, I don't understand it. I think sidelining Raiden is a little weird for this movie. I get why they do it, but it just feels like so typical of this kind of thing where you have to sideline this uber powerful character.
You know what? And I guess like that. Okay. So I think you put it like really the nail in the coffin, which is the issue, which is that the stuff that is typical is so typical of this kind of movie. It's eye rolling. Like, yeah, right.
And
like,
the first one was so like fun. You just wanted them to do like, don't do the thing that everybody else does that we know you're like every character that dies in this movie. I knew they were going to die. Like,
yeah.
I knew Jax was biting the dust.
Like, oh,
before
yeah.
we even got to that fight, I was like, well, Jax is not going to make, which is a shame. And I get like they set up for a third one. Like, we're going to get everybody back. Okay. But like, Makai Brooks is so fun. And I really, just as an actor, I really like this dude. He was in Supergirl as James Olsen.
Oh, okay.
And I loved him in that show. And it was so good to see him doing something a little, because he doesn't get a lot to do in Supergirl till like towards the end. He becomes a character called Guardian from the DC universe. And so gets to kind of be a superhero too. But up until he becomes the Guardian, like, he is kind of just this side character. So seeing him as Jax, like, you get to see him actually be big and badass. And so it kind of sucked to watch him bite the dust. Especially because that, like, again, maybe blasphemy, but I think he's a stronger character than Sonya Blade, but never was a Sonya Blade fan. So
yeah. It's one of those things where you really kind of like ultimately it's a mixed bag, but the stuff that's good is so good. You forgive it for the trespasses of being as pedestrian, because like the thing that works, like you said, like going back to the first film, like the thing that works is that even the stuff with Liu Kang and all of the other, like, all of the characters is that, like it's done in a way that they really mean it. It's sincere. So that, like, that opening 10 minutes with Scorpion and Sub-Zero's origins, right? It's, like, yeah. It's done so, like, passionately and, like, done with a regard for, like, the respect for the series that you can't help but go, damn, that's awesome. Like it elevates it because of the passion which they're telling it. The stuff that they're telling, not everything they're passionate about. And it's almost like you said, like, if you weren't going to be passionate about Jade and Katana's story, which is implied, there are certain things that are implied that are very interesting. If you're not going to be that passionate about it, just stick with the Johnny Cage stuff. Because there's more than enough with Sub-Zero and all of the dangling story plot threads that you left from the first film that it's okay. Like, we have enough characters, right? Like, we don't, like, bringing Shao Kahn is just enough, right? You don't, like, you can even bring in Katana and have her be like a Sub-Zero type of character, right? Like, where she's always in the mask, and then in the third one, you bring her to the forefront, right?
Yeah,
because you can't just keep on killing off main, like, there's only so many main villains that they have.
And hero, like, short shrifting some of the heroes from the first film, specifically Louis Tan's character.
Oh my god! Yes,
is really, really like Cole Young is not a character from Mortal Kombat Lord that I give two shits about. Cole Young in the Mortal Kombat movie is a character that I wound up caring about. Because of the first movie.
Yes.
And he gets sidelined on top of, like, I like Louis Tan anyway. Like,
yeah.
He, I don't know what's worse, like, how Deadpool treats Louis Tan, which is kind of funny. Or how Mortal Kombat 2 treats Louis Tan, which is more in the, like, well, that's tragic because he deserves better than this. Louis Tan is not just a good actor. He's a fantastic martial artist. Like,
yes.
You could just go to YouTube and look up clips of him, like, fight. Like, he's so dynamic. And I think in the first movie, there's a fight with Scorpion, Sub-Zero, and Cole. And they're in, like, the little cage thing. And it's so fun and, like, not to reuse a word, but dynamic and just fast and quick. And there's so much going on there. And his fight in this movie is none of those things.
No.
Like, it's okay, but you know the minute it starts that he's going down.
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely. You know he's going to die. Like, you know he's going to die because they've already, like, as soon as they give Shao Kahn that whole, like, oh, let's give him a demigod power, it's like, oh, okay, so why should I give a shit about this? Because they're all dead. Like, anybody who faces him, he's going to kill them.
Yeah.
And, like, but then you don't make the death matter. Like, okay, so, like, what happened to his, like, what happened to his his wife and his daughter? He just decided to, like, he just decided to go off to, like, you know, Raiden's palace in the sky. Like, you know, the Doctor Strange, like, the Doctor Strange school, and just sit there for, like, ever and have all of these fights. It's just a weird choice, right? Like, there, and again, I blame Jeremy Slater because yeah. Jeremy Slater has, like, he, like, movies that he's done that, like that I've seen in projects that I've seen, he makes decisions that I don't like. Like, I yeah. really don't like. And I think that, like, you, like, you know, Moon Knight is one of the big ones, right? He was the yeah. showrunner. Like, he had, like, exclusive, like,
He also helped bring the Umbrella Academy to television.
Yes. And
it is a pretty great series throughout, but he does have a lot of other, like, there's a lot of other forces in that
yes.
help make that great. So maybe if it was just him, it wouldn't be as good. I don't know. I really wonder, like, what they lost from the first movie to this one. And like you said, I don't want to shit on it because I did enjoy it, but
yeah,
it just was not as exciting as that first movie. And, you know, maybe that's part of it. I really do think, like, losing, like, Louis Tan is at least a somewhat focus of the story was a big part of it for me. I don't know if you know this. He has another movie coming out soon or soon-ish that's directed by Scott Adkins.
Yes.
Like, the actor Scott Adkins called Brawler. And so maybe that will be, you know, something I can go see Louis Tan kick some ass in that.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, yeah, I follow Scott Adkins. I love Scott Adkins because, like, you know, you don't get too many B-movie, like, truly talented B movie.
He's really fun in The Rip.
Yeah, he is. But like if you know all of his other movies, like they're very much so elevated B movie trash. That, you know, if you're fans of 90s action movies, like he literally is Johnny Cage. Like, yeah. I'm just gonna like he is the real life Johnny Cage. But I, yeah, like it's, again, it's a vibe. I like the movie. I like the movie a lot. It's just the stuff that wasn't good.
Just wasn't very good.
Good. It was very pedestrian. It's very normal. But then the stuff that's good is really good.
Yeah.
Like I'm not gonna lie. Like the Kano and John, like I keep on going back to it, but the Kano and Johnny Cage stuff is so great. And then of course, like I think that the Sub-Zero Scorpion stuff is just as good because of the level of actor that they got. Like,
yeah.
It
doesn't get the, I don't think it gets the, I mean, it does get a little bit there at the end, but like, it's such a thing in the forefront of the first movie that it, and I get it. Like you don't, it's not until the end that he knows that, Bi-Han is still alive and
yeah,
like becomes a whole thing. But, yeah, I walked out going like, I wish I enjoyed that more. I didn't hate it. I really did enjoy it. I hope that it does well enough that there is going to be a third one.
Oh, but I'm fairly certain it is. Like yeah, so that there is that third one so that we actually get the promise. But I think that everything is pointing to it making just as much, if not more money than the first one did. And that's
good.
And that's with, that is like, and that is also with a, like two huge blockbusters out right now. You know, that's with like The Devil Wears Prada and, whatchamacallit, good Lord, I can't even think of it. Michael still making gangbusters, like both of them still making a ton of money, but looks
Michael's
like it's
going to make $1 billion, man.
Yeah, we're going to get Michael too. Michael Jackson will return in the Avengers, Michael Jackson Thriller Tour.
It's funny. I made a similar cut when we went to go see Devil Wears Prada last week. Like there were people just sitting in the theater, like we got up and left because I was like, there's not an after credit scene in the Devil Wears Prada movie, but there were a couple people still sitting in the theater and I was like, what are they waiting on? Like, do they think it's gonna say Miranda Priestley will return in Avengers Doomsday?
Like, and that's literally what they think. Like that's literally what they think. But I mean, you know, movies are back, man. Like they're back. They're back with a vengeance.
There's a couple of people that we didn't just quickly, like Damon Harriman is Quan Chi, like doesn't get a lot to do in this movie, but I like Damon Harriman. It's always nice to see him show up and stuff. We talked about CJ Bloomfield, but like really the special effects in this movie are fucking great. Like
they really are.
For something that you could easily just wave your hand and be like, nobody really cares. Like just make it passable. Like I don't think there's a single point in this movie that the special effects felt like they weren't important, you know?
Well, also the sets, they built a lot of this. You can tell
the
that
sets
it was
are fantastic. Like it does have that like feel of like getting dropped into like the video game fight stuff.
Yes.
But it's supposed to, and you can tell that they did the work to make it feel like you're actually in that environment, not on the fucking volume. You mentioned Jade, and she also doesn't get a ton to do, but Tati Gabrielle, I love her. She was in the Sabrina reboot series on Netflix, and she was absolutely fantastic in that. It's nice to see her in something like this big because the last few years she's not done a ton. Like, she was in The Last of Us. She's Nora.
Yeah.
But, like, that's the only other thing that is real. Like, nobody saw Uncharted, you know? She was in that Kaleidoscope show on Netflix, too. But, like, I don't know if it's her, like, not working or if it's that the work hasn't been there. But she was also in The 100 before Sabrina, but I didn't watch The 100. So
yeah.
But I really, really like her. I wish she had more to do. I'm glad her character didn't die. So maybe there's something else there in the third one. And, you know, Max Wang as Kung Lao is fantastic. I'm glad he did get to come back. I absolutely fucking love that fight scene, but I do wish he were a bigger part of the movie. So,
yeah.
But there's hopefully the third one. But man, Kung Lao probably my favorite Mortal Kombat character. I don't know.
Okay.
I really like him.
No, that tracks and completely.
I wish Louis Tan was playing Kung Lao, because then, like, because I don't give a shit about Cole Young.
But you know the reason why they didn't cast Louis Tan, like, because he was the star. And you can't have the star wearing a helmet, or wearing a wide brim hat the entire time. Yeah. Like, that's the reason why. And he doesn't fit. He also doesn't fit. You can't make him Liu Kang, because he doesn't fit the Liu Kang model, right?
Yeah.
Ludi Lin is actually perfect to play play Kung Lao, Liu Kang, like that. Yeah,
and he's a great Liu Kang. Like, yeah. I just drew a blank on his name. The original film back in the 90s. What's the guy's name that played Liu Kang?
Good grief. Let me look it up really quick. Because I don't remember. I literally do not remember off the top of my head.
Robin Cho.
Yes, Robin Cho. There we go. Yeah.
He was okay, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in a world where, you know, we didn't have Brandon Lee anymore, you know, he was fine. But I think this guy's absolutely fantastic as Liu Kang.
So. He brings that, he does bring that, like, he does really bring that whole, like Bruce Lee, be the water kind of energy, which I really appreciate, because Robin Chow never brought that. Like, he brought the more manic energy, the more like Enter the Dragon thing.
Yeah.
So I'm I'm all for it. Like, I really do like this cast. Like, I like the fact that they spent money on an R-rated film, and it's gonna show it's gonna like prove, like, they're predicting it's gonna do basically a Final Destination numbers. It's gonna make about $55 million, which is great. That means that, like, it did double of what the first one did, that opened during the pandemic, but also didn't do great at it did a big opening and then just fell off. This is probably gonna, like, I could see this making money throughout the month of May, and then, like, you know, they'll probably end up at probably $100 million, you know, which is a tidy sum for an R-rated action movie. Yeah. Like, you know, that's not worldwide. So, like, I'm happy for it. Like, it's not the best, but I feel ultimately it suffers from what a lot of sequels suffer from, which is overstuffedness, like putting too much into it. Yeah.
It's weird because we just saw another sequel, and, like, it's almost the opposite. Like, Devil Wears Prada is just it's the same movie.
Yeah.
20 years apart, you know, where this is, you know, not same enough, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like I wanted more of the same, and I got that whole, like, we're going to expand the world. And it's like, ah, you went too far. Like, you needed to scale it back just a little bit and make it a little tighter. Maybe one less character to focus on. And that would have been better.
Yeah. So. It's like to make the comparison, it's somewhere between Devil Wears Prada and Mario Galaxy. Like, it's not the trash Galaxy. Yeah.
No, there's at least a story here.
Yes. Well, there's story. There's characters that you like. Like, it makes the right decisions for the most part. You know, like, there's a lot to like in this movie.
We're trashing Mario Galaxy. It's going to cross $900 million worldwide this weekend.
Yeah. But, you know, it's no accounting for taste.
You got that right.
You know, I mean, you know, I just hope that, like, the only thing that I hope is that I hope that Zelda's bodes better. Like, I just really hope that that doesn't mean that Zelda's going to be a terrible ass movie. Like, I really don't. Like, and it really worries me because also, like, we've gotten indications of the world and the story that they're telling in Zelda. Like, did you see the recent, like couple of new pictures and then also the crew jacket?
No.
Okay. And it is definitely in Breath of the Wild world. Like, they're telling the Breath of the Wild, like, version of Zelda, which I am not a fan of. Like, I mean, like, you know, I don't mind Miyazaki influence, but, like, you're basically giving me something that, like, give me the original. Like, not, I don't need a little kid, but give me a sense of adventure, not this, like, navel gazing. And I'm just afraid that it's going to be a lot of navel gazing. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, man, come on. No, don't do that to me. But, again, I don't know. But we will find out, right? Like, we will find out. It's a very interesting, like, I mean, we talked about this a couple of years ago about how, like, the rise of video game movies started to happen. And, like, by this time, by 2026, 2027, we would see it full on. And we're seeing full on. And it's interesting. Like, I'm not, like, it's not as bad as, like, I mean, as much as I have affection for the original Mario movie. Like, I know objectively it's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Like, we know that both Mortal Kombat movies are trash, but we love them. Like, Street Fighter, I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, we both know. Like, we both have affection for that.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. As much as we might like it and find it entertaining, it's a trash-ass movie. But these movies, even, like, stuff like Uncharted, it may not move the needle, but it's fun and it's a movie, like, right? It's a movie. It's not like, you know, some of this stuff is slob, but I mean, you know, I found Minecraft entertaining. It's interesting to see where they're going and how some are blossoming and some are floundering, but they're still making a lot of money. Yeah. I can only imagine this is the way that, like, some cinemas felt about the Marvel movies. Like, where, like, I'm in the bucket for all Marvel movies. Like, I'm a little bit more trepidatious about video game adaptations. Like, I really want a story. Because I guess, you know what it is? It's that the bar has been set how terrible video game movies can be. And I know what my emotional experience with video games have been.
Well, I mean, up until there was Batman, right?
Yeah.
Up until maybe Blade, we had the Michael Keaton Batman movie, and that was it for, like, superhero cinema. And now we're at a point where yes, that's still a good movie, but, like, honestly, the Dark Knight is, like, cinema, and Batman 89 is, like, oh, that's a pretty good movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the bar jumped so high, and we're just, I think we're just now getting to that with video games where the bar is starting to get moved to a certain level so that something like Super Mario Galaxy, the movie, like you look at it and go like, yeah, like here's the thing. We've seen what video game movies can be. This, like, it made a shit ton of money, so it will be good enough for a lot of people. But for people that enjoy video games and movies, that's not good enough now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not going to be good enough. And, you know, and maybe that's part of the problem I have with Mortal Kombat 2 is, like, I've seen where the bar can be. And so this is under the bar. Like, the first one, I think, is a better, tighter, more fun movie. So this comes under that bar. But it's still well above something like Super Mario Galaxy. It's fun and exciting to be at that point. But that, unfortunately, means that the lows are going to be... They're going to feel... a lot fucking lower because we know where the bar can be. Like, we know the good that you can do. So then it becomes like, well, why did you make something that wasn't that good? You know, like in a world where like the pinnacle before the 90s, the pinnacle of superhero cinema was the first and second Superman movie.
Yeah.
And everything else was just like Howard the Duck. It was like,
or okay, worse. Well,
yes. That's what I'm saying. You really only had to be on that level, you know?
Yeah.
But then you get to Sam Raimi's Spider-Man and it's like, okay, well, we have to keep going above and beyond. You get to, X-Men first, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Blade, I guess, first.
Blade, then it's, yeah.
Like, oh, okay, well, we can do this with comic book movies? Like, oh, well, then we can do the X-Men. Oh, then we can do Spider-Man. Oh, like, and then, you know, Marvel says, well, we're just gonna, fuck it, we're gonna do it all ourselves. And, you know, when you look at Iron Man compared to, I don't know, Steel starring Shaq.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
It's like, okay, we've come a long way. So, yeah, you know, going back to something like the original Super Mario Brothers movie, mm-hmm. like, it's easy to just, you know, feel like, okay, we're in the golden age. But, like, they really gotta, you know, keep... at least hitting the bar, not resetting it, but you got to keep trying to hit the bar. Don't fucking settle for like a bunch of cameos and
another
way of me shitting on Super Mario Galaxy. But that movie was bad. So
sorry about that. I lost you. But I did hear, you know, and like to your point, like at least like the thing is that at least with Mortal Kombat, they tried to raise the bar. I just think that there's too many ideas and some of those ideas were half cooked. Like yeah. Ultimately that's what my thing is in regards to Mortal Kombat 2 is that I really liked it. I really liked it a lot. Like, and when I watch it, like, I'm going to buy it on 4K, of course. But when I watch it, I'm probably going to skip through the Katana stuff. And it's not, like, anything because of toxic, like, you know, bad toxic, like, toxic masculinity or anything like that. It's just because it doesn't work. It just, like, give me the stuff that works. And, like, this is one of those mixed bag movies where... the stuff that I really like, I loved. And, like, like, the thing was that my first impression was when they, like, literally sit there within the first 5 minutes and put Johnny Cage into the world, and he's saying what he's saying, and he's making these quippy remarks, I'm like, holy shit, this is gonna be, like, this is gonna be a great sequel. And then it just started playing out, and some stuff really worked, and some stuff didn't. It ultimately ended up being, I really enjoyed that. There was a lot of problems, but you know what? It's better than its problems, which is something I cannot say about Mario Galaxy. I absolutely cannot say. Like, the first, like, it makes the first movie, like, that series and its sequel, the sequel makes the first series look, the first movie look better, which, in a good way. Like, I would never be able to watch that. Like, I've at least gone back to the first movie. I won't go back to the second movie with the Mario. Yeah,
I don't think I will either. If I do, it will be a passive watch. It won't be a, like, sit there and, like, there's some fun in that first movie. It's just mostly boring and mind numbing in the second movie. So, all right. So, next, we have not discussed this. Like, next week doesn't have a ton, but, like, assuming it's playing here, I'm going to see In the Gray.
Which one is In the Gray?
That's the Jake Gyllenhaal.
The Guy Ritchie one. Yeah. No. Absolutely. I totally want to see that. Like, I knew that there was a new Guy Ritchie movie. It's just, I didn't know what it was called.
In the Gray is not a standout title. Like, no. Because In the Gray could be a drama. It could be an action movie.
It could be
a comedy. Like, there's nothing that kind of tells you what you're getting into, you know? I kind of sort of want to see Obsession, but I don't know if I can. I don't know if I'm down for the absolute uncomfortability of what that movie is promising.
I've heard from a few people that it's not very good because it's very one note. That's from a couple of people that I know that I respect their horror opinions on. And they just said that the concept is not taken. It should, like, somebody, like, one person said it should have been directed by a woman because they would have been able to do more with the concept. And the other person said it's a high concept that they do nothing with. It's just the same thing repeated over and over again. Yeah. You're supposed to have empathy for a guy who, like, is basically
I'm going to be so uncomfortable because I'm going to be like, well, this guy's just getting everything that, and it also, like, kind of made, like, I can't stop thinking about there's a Tales from the Crypt episode.
Yes. Yes, there is.
Where a guy basically, like, wishes that this woman was obsessed with him, and, like, you know, spoilers for a fucking 30-year-old episode of television. Basically, he kills himself and she kills herself and follows him into the afterlife. That's the button on that story. And I'm like, yeah, this just feels a lot like that. So, but in a more, like, tense, uncomfortable setting, not in a, like, haha, that's kind of funny. Definitely In the Gray is, like, I'm excited to see that. We talked about it. I got on a little bit of a Guy Ritchie kick. So,
yes,
I'm all geared up for some more Guy Ritchie stuff. So, it looks like that's probably what we're going to be talking about next week. And hopefully, I didn't ask. Hopefully, you will have gotten to, I just drew a blank on the name of the show, the Matthew Reese Show on Apple TV.
I have not yet, but I am going to next week. It's just this week we're traveling and stuff. So, unfortunately, I cannot watch it, but I will be watching it.
It's so good, so funny, and so scary is not the right word, and creepy isn't harsh enough for what it is, because it's
dread.
Yes.
It is unsettling.
Unsettling, man. Like, so unsettling, but also so fucking funny. Like, you will be laughing and then something will happen and it will be like, oh God, like, where's, I have to cover my eyes.
No,
it is wild that they pull this off. It is absolutely wild. I'm enjoying every single bit of it. So anyway, we'll be back next week, hopefully talking about those two things. Until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can find our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com, where I've got a ton of content that's recently posted. I'm taking some time off, so there's going to be less this there's been less last week in this, or this week and the following week, but a bunch of 4Ks in the pipeline. Be reviewing things like The Great Outdoors, The Phantom, a couple of Charlie Bronson movies that are hilarious and bad, but in the best way possible. As you know, that's my sweet spot. That's always my sweet spot of, like, terrible and bad, but in an entertaining fashion. But anywho, movieisle.com. We'll be back next week. And then we'll talk to you guys then.
See you then.
Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say hello together if you're with me now.